Good morning. It's good to be with you today. Pardon the casual look today. Our air conditioner is out at our house, and I'm going to stay cool as long as I can. I know what's waiting for me when I get home. Please be sure to pick up one of the meeting announcements today. There are several on the table in the back and in the lobby. There's lots of those printed. I'll be emailing you a PDF of those also that you can send those out to people that you would like to invite. What I'd like to talk with you about this morning is boredom. I'm not trying to set you up for what the sermon's going to be like, hopefully. But, you know, this is the time of year when your children, hypothetically speaking, might come home since they're out of school and say, "I'm so bored. I don't have anything to do." Child may have a room full of action figures, video games, satellite or cable TV, every piece of sport equipment known to man, their own telephone, computer with internet access, but they don't have anything to do. I didn't have most of those things when I was growing up. We went out and found dirt clods just to throw. That was our entertainment. I guess sometimes maybe we said we were bored too. But you know, boredom is certainly something that does pop up this time of year when kids are out of school. The cries of "I'm bored" just seem to begin just hours after school lets out. But when we talk about boredom today in our lesson, we want to talk about it from a spiritual standpoint. Sometimes when people are bored, they get into trouble. It can be a spiritual problem. 1 Timothy chapter 5 warns us about this. 1 Timothy chapter 5. "But refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some have already turned aside to Satan." So here we see that Paul is warning Timothy what happens when people are idle. And it's not hard to see that this is a problem here. Paul says the problem begins when they're idle, and when they're idle, they begin to be busybodies, and when they are idle, they begin to be gossips, and they're going to spend their time doing something. So boredom can be a spiritual problem. People with time on their hands get into problems. Sometimes boredom leads to drug problems and other types of substance abuse. Boredom sometimes causes people to commit immorality. Boredom in a marriage can cause people to seek out other ways to alleviate that boredom. They may commit adultery, leading to divorce sometimes. So you can see that boredom is something that can cause problems. Well, what is the cause of boredom? Ironically, sometimes the cause of boredom is our overindulgence. You know, there is a law of diminishing returns. We've all heard about that. And certainly the Scriptures support that thought and warn us about that. Let's look at a few of those examples. The law of diminishing returns. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 16 says, "Have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit." It's going to be good for a while, but after a while, it's not going to be good for you anymore. There's a limit to the amount of good things that you can handle before it becomes harmful to you. So, surprisingly, having too much leads to dissatisfaction with what you already have. So there are limits to the amount of good things that we can handle before they become a hindrance to us. This is a symptom, I think, of the age in which we live. We are a very pleasure-obsessed age. And a side effect of that, ironically, is boredom. Ceaseless pleasure can cause us to keep looking for more and more ways to spend our time. And sometimes that causes people to go off in directions that they ought not. They want to rekindle that initial thrill. When we overindulge in something, it just becomes less and less fun. Have you noticed that? It wasn't the things are not the same impact as they were the first time. You know, I've mentioned to Jarrell several times when we go to see movies, and there are certain movies that I wish I could see again for the first time. You know, like Jurassic Park is one that, you know, it's such a new experience. I wish I could see it again for the first time and just experience it. Or Raiders of the Lost Ark. It was like nothing I'd seen before. And I won't ever be able to watch it again for the first time and see it like I did that time. It's not the same each successive viewing. And sometimes pleasures can be that way. That it's just you're seeking for something else all the time. You're trying to rekindle that initial feeling that you had. And so when people can't get that full impact again, they just decide that they're bored. Certainly that is a problem, and it leads to spiritual problems. Let's look at Ezekiel chapter 16. Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 49 and 50. The prophet tells us this was a problem in Sodom. Look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter had pride, fullness of food, and abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. They were haughty and committed abomination before me, but therefore I took them away as I saw fit. An abundance of idleness. Isn't that interesting that an abundance of idleness was a problem in Sodom and Gomorrah? And it led to their moral decay. Idleness, boredom can lead to moral decay. And it can lead to leaving God as well. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 15, it's described this way, but Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. You grew fat, you grew thick, you were obese. Then he forsook God who made him and scornfully esteemed the rock of his salvation. You know, drug addicts have to take bigger and bigger doses of drugs to achieve the feeling that they want. Even when you're taking prescription medication, sometimes it doesn't have the same effect anymore after you've been taking it for a while. The doctor will have to change you to something else because your body gets used to it. And when we're talking about our life and seeking after pleasure, when you're so used to seeking after pleasure, you have to keep doing it and seeking it. And for example, the movies and the television shows that we watch. I know some of you here may watch American Idol. And that's supposed to be a show that generally families can watch together. But at the end of this season, there was Lady Gaga was on there quite a bit. And if you've seen her, she's not suitable for family viewing. It's like they were pushing the envelope. And that keeps audiences entertained, I guess. That shows and movies become more and more explicit. And maybe that's what some people want. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 17 tells us that sometimes the breaking of taboos is what makes people interested in things. The breaking of taboos, the crossing of lines, the going where you're not supposed to go, gives you a thrill. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 17, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Well, why is that? Isn't water water? Why is stolen water sweet? Have you ever known somebody that's done something illegal? They've broken some kind of rule and they brag about it. You know what I did? I wasn't supposed to go in here. And it may be something that really seems insignificant. And the wise writer says, stolen water is sweet. Well, what about just water? Why isn't just water that's not stolen sweet? sometimes the breaking of the law, the breaking of a taboo, the breaking of a rule is something that gives somebody a thrill. And boredom and seeking after pleasure, I think, is affiliated with that. When people keep stepping over the line of propriety to get their thrills. And it seems like the line keeps moving. And as our consciences get seared, it takes more and more for people to get excited about. And certainly that's a danger. Something we need to be aware of. Do things bring us happiness? Do covetous and greed bring people happiness, or does it generally bring sorrow? I was talking to one of my friends the other day that I hadn't spoken to in a while. He's moved off to Mississippi and has a new job. And he was telling me that he's making less money than he used to make. He used to work for Fuji Graphics Systems, and sold us materials that we use where I work. He said he's making a lot less money than he used to, but he's happy. He's really happy with what he's doing. And he said, well, money can't buy happiness. And we talked about that for a little bit. And you know, we always say that money can't buy happiness, but people would like to try if they had the chance. You know, they always have heard that it won't buy happiness, but I would really like to see if it would, you know, just for a while. Well, is that really the attitude that we should have? We need to realize that Paul tells Timothy that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Covetous and greed doesn't bring happiness, it brings sorrow. The love of money, not money itself, but the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And certainly people can try to alleviate their boredom with things. And you know, sometimes as parents, when a child is born, or bored rather, there's a temptation for us, if they're bored, we'll just keep giving them stuff. We'll solve the problem by giving them more things. And you know, we have to wonder, are we really helping the situation by doing that? Or are we perpetuating a problem? Instead of improving a situation, we may be making it more difficult and causing harm. And you know, it's not just children that want things. Adults want them too. I don't have an iPad yet. Eileen's got one. I know everybody that's got one. My mom's got one. We played with it up at her house yesterday. You know, there's part of me that really wants that, and there's part of me that says, you know, I really don't need it. There's nothing that it's going to do for me that my computer doesn't do, but it sure is lighter. And it doesn't get hot on my lap like the laptop does. You know. But sometimes adults are the same way as kids. We want things. And there's nothing wrong with things, but if we're obsessed with them, then we can have a big problem. And we buy ourselves stuff to make ourselves feel better, and if we can't afford it, that's all right. We'll just keep piling on to debt. It's very unwise. So, what do we do? Let's not exacerbate the problem of idleness by thinking we can solve it with things. Another cause of boredom is underexertion. The wise writer of Proverbs has a lot to say about underexertion, otherwise known as laziness. Proverbs 19, verse 15, laziness casts one into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. Laziness causes a deep sleep. Isn't that interesting? You know, sometimes labor will cause a deep sleep. But you know, doing nothing will cause people to sleep too. I like Proverbs chapter 26, verse 14, where it says, as the door turns on its hinges, so does the lazy man on his bed. Keeps flopping around on the bed. The slothful turns back and forth on the bed just like a door does on its hinges. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 11 says, "For we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies." Have you ever noticed that before? Where Paul talks about those who are walking in a disorderly manner. The ones that are walking disorderly are doing what? They're not working at all. They're not doing anything in a productive way. You know, if they were doing something productive, maybe they wouldn't be busybodies. Maybe they wouldn't be walking in a disorderly manner. Lack of work makes us disorderly. We've always heard people say, well, children with too much time on their hands are going to get in trouble. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 24 says, "A lazy man buries his hand in the bowl and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again." This says that the lazy is too bored and too lazy to even enjoy his indulgences. Proverbs 12, verse 27 says, "The lazy man does not roast what he took in hunting, but diligence is the man's precious possession." The lazy man does not even prepare or enjoy the things that he has. So, boredom causes or overindulgence, and laziness or underexertion. So, how do we solve the problem of boredom and the things that it causes? Well, first of all, it's obvious that we need to be content. Luke chapter 12, verse 15 says, Jesus said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of things which he possesses." Certainly we understand that, and we've read that verse many times where Jesus tells us that. You know, it's one of those lessons that I need to hear over and over. That our life is not defined by the abundance of things that we own. You've heard the phrase that less is more. And many times that is exactly true. Let's look at some examples that we see in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 16. It says, "Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble." So here, less is more in the realm of, if you fear God, you're much better off than the person who has a lot. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble with the person that doesn't fear the Lord. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 8, "Better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice." I skipped the passage there. But Proverbs 16, verse 8 is telling us that it's better to have righteousness, to have a just judge, to have somebody that will judge righteously, than have vast revenues, all the money that you want, and not have any justice. Love. Proverbs 15, verse 17. "Better is a dinner of herbs where love is, than a fatted calf with hatred." Let me put that in our terms. It's better to eat a salad where love is than have a steak with hatred. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted calf with hatred. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 1, "Better is a dry morsel with quietness than a house of feasting with strife." Ecclesiastes 4, verse 6, "Better is a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind." So here you see that less is more. Many times it is better to have less and realize that what you really have is more. It's the way that you're looking at it, isn't it? It's not that you really have less, it's that you have more, and you need to put the value on the proper things. The fear of God, the love, the justice, the righteousness, all those things have value more than the temporal value of the big meal, of the riches. and that kind of thing. Does having more lead us closer to God? I think when Paul warned Timothy concerning the rich, that they needed to be aware that having more would lead them away from God if they were not careful. They needed to be careful about that. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. Godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Are you really content? Godliness with contentment is a great gain. Are you really content? Let's say that you were never able to gain another possession. That what you have now is what you're going to have. Would you be able to be content? Paul spoke to that in Philippians 4, verse 11. He says, "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content." You know, of all the lessons that Paul learned, certainly that was one that was very valuable. That he could learn to be content in whatever state he was in. And he says that he knew how to be abased and how to abound. He knew how to deal with having very little, and he knew how to deal with having a lot. "Everywhere in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." What a wonderful thing it is that he could say that. And we need to be able to say that as well. That we can learn in whatever state we're in to be content. We can solve the problem of boredom and idleness with being content. We can also be diligent. We need to approach our life in a way that would be pleasing to God. Our approach often determines the kind of attitude that we're going to have. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 7 says, "As he thinks in his heart, so is he." We need to be aware that we can train ourselves to be more content and to not be bored, not let these effects of idleness have a negative effect on us. We need to be diligent in preparing our heart, because sin comes from our heart. Mark chapter 7, verse 21, "For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness." You know, it may be very simple, but the answer to being bored is just deciding that you're not going to be bored. And maybe that sounds ridiculous. But just, can you do that? Can we apply what Romans 12, verse 11 says, "Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord"? And sometimes we can decide that this is going to be boring. I'm going to participate in something that I don't want to do, and it's going to be boring. And a lot of times it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because we've already made up our mind what our attitude is going to be about it. A lot of times situations will live up or live down to our expectations. Sometimes we're surprised and we've prepared for the worst, and maybe something actually turns out to be pretty good. What do we need to do about our attitudes? Are we bored with serving God and coming together to worship? And certainly, you know, the speaker, the preacher, has some responsibility in helping people not be bored with the lesson, but the listener has some responsibility in that as well. To not be not preparing yourself to say, well, I'm not really looking forward to this. I'm preparing myself to be negative. Romans 12:11 says, not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. You know, yesterday, the boys and I went up to spend the day with my mom and dad since last week. We weren't able to because their power and air conditioning was out, and we wouldn't go up there. Isn't that interesting? And now ours is out. But we went up there for the day, and my mom was telling me about a woman in Athens who had contacted her about an article that my mom had written. And the woman who was talking to her was 65, and she's very active in the church. She's been divorced for years, and she told my mom for a long time that she didn't think that she really had anything to offer the congregation there because she was single, and just in the last few years she's gotten real involved in teaching and really trying to help strengthen the younger Christians that are there. And I thought that was really positive. You know, her whole mindset toward what she can do to help the congregation had changed. But the thing that really stood out to me is that my mother said that, you know, she has copied the Bible word for word, the whole Bible. She's written the whole Bible down. And she's done that with the New Testament 3 times. And, you know, the first thing that popped into my mind was, why would somebody do that? And the next thing that crossed my mind is, why would I have thought that? Because she is retired. She has time on her hands. And you know, what is she doing with her idleness? And what, you know, those of us living in school know that note-taking is one of the best ways to learn, isn't it? When the teacher is telling you something and you're writing it down, there's a reason that you're writing it down. It doesn't always work, but hopefully when you put it down on paper, when you're writing something, it goes into your brain. And she has been copying the Bible down, so it's going from her hand into her brain. And, you know, I don't know a lot of people that have done that. I don't know that I've ever heard of somebody writing the Bible like a scribe down word for word, the whole Bible. But she's done it and done the New Testament several times. And I thought that was really interesting that here is someone that really could have gone in the wrong direction with her idleness, but is trying to use it in a positive way to strengthen her knowledge of the Scriptures and also to prepare her to help others as well. So we can show diligence. We don't have to be bored. And you know, one of the worst things a child can tell their parents is that they're bored, because the parents will find them something to do. At least that was the way it was around my house. That was not something I wanted to tell my mom and dad, because they would fix that in a hurry. So I'd rather find something to do myself. We need to use the time that we have to grow. Solving the problem of boredom, well, use the time that you have to try to grow. As was read this morning in 2 Peter 1, to add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. When you look at this passage that Noah read for us this morning, you notice that it said diligence. For this very reason, give all diligence. Giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue. And in verse 10, it also says diligence again. Therefore, brethren, be even more diligent to make your calling and election sure. So if you're busy doing what Peter says to do, you're adding these fruits of the Spirit, you are growing, you're improving your knowledge. Are you going to be bored? And unlike the things in this world that we may indulge ourselves in, there's not any diminishing returns. The things in this world, And we talked about it at the beginning, you know, people seeking after pleasure and after things. You just want more and more. And it doesn't really do anything for you. There's no diminishing returns when it's spiritual growth. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8, "But grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. To Him be the glory now and forever." You know, sometimes, I don't know about you, but I just need to be challenged to be someone new. To be refreshed. And to be renewed. To learn how to spend your time in things that are worthwhile. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 14 says, "The love of Christ compels us, because we judge thus, that if one died for all, then all died, and he died for all, that those who should live no longer for themselves, but for him who died for them and rose again. Therefore, from now on, we regard no one according to the flesh, even though we have known Christ according to the flesh, yet now we know him thus no longer. If anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation." Is that what you are? That's what we need to be. We need to no longer live for ourselves, but live for Christ. That means that we are transformed, as Paul said in Romans chapter 12, we're transformed by the renewing of our minds. That we present our bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God. So we don't think in terms of what Randy wants, what makes me happy, why I'm bored. But how am I going to be transformed? How am I going to live my life and glorify Christ? John 15, verse 8 says, "By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit." Before you ever make the comment that I'm bored, think about what you could be doing to alleviate that by becoming more and more like Jesus Christ. And you know, if you can't think of something else to do, you can write the Bible word for word. Again, I was so surprised when I heard that, and it impresses me more and more as I think about it, that she has taken the time to do that, and hopefully those things that she's writing are going into her mind so that she can share it with others. Today, if you have not started that life of a Christian, you know, what you're doing is you are living for yourself. Paul says we don't need to live for ourselves, we need to live for Christ. And that starts by being a disciple of Christ, by being buried in baptism, arising to walk in new life. That shows that we no longer want to live for ourselves, but we want to live for Him so that we can have hope of a home in heaven in eternity. If we can help you in any way, we'd like to help you while we stand and sing.